You have offended my family, and you have offended the Shaolin Temple.
Well, pop yourself a beer or a cold libation. I can tell you how I wrote this little theme. I went and took a call from Brother Jason, and he tells me that he has a little dream. He says he needs a backwards intro to begin his podcast, and I ask him, what you got? He said, I'll start off with some talking and some moody clips of popcorn fighting, fantasy explorations and some groundless exploitation. Kickstarts that I'm watching and some blind unboxing, slow month or a movie marathon. Sometimes I let the dogs come on, contest and of course you know it's all about games. I said, slow down, let's just start with the name. It's the Nerds RPG Variety with the other Jason.
Hey everybody, Jason here. This episode's all about Master Bruce Lee and Enter the Dragon, but I have two quick admin notes for you. One is that we spoil the heck out of this movie. There's a panel discussion and we just lay it all to bear. If you haven't seen Enter the Dragon, check it out. It's on a ton of streaming services. You can get VHS, DVD, Blu-ray copies. It's coming to the theaters in the U.S. in August of 2023. Find a way to watch it. But honestly, if you listen to the spoilers and then watch it, it won't ruin the movie. It's that good of a movie. Also, in our excitement, we didn't rate it on the 3B scale, badasses, boobs, and body counts. But it thoroughly delivers on all categories. So, two thumbs up from all the panelists, and let's get into it. Oh, well, actually, before we get into it, I'll let Master Lee give you some good advice.
Or don't hit back.
Welcome back to the Nerds RPG Variety Cast. I'm your host, Jason. And this is a special group discussion about Bruce Lee and probably the perfect martial arts movie, Enter the Dragon. I've got a great panel with me today. We've got Joe Salvador of Raven Guy Games and Joe Richter of Hindsightless, both lifelong fans of Master Lee and of these movies and of this culture that surrounds this. And I think we're going to have a really good discussion. How are you gentlemen doing today?
I'm doing really good, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I'm doing good, Jason. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. Excellent. So what we're going to do, because we have two Joes, is Joe Salvador is going to be Joe and Joe Richter is going to be Joey. And you'll recognize the voices. I guess we'll start by talking Bruce Lee. And the reason we're talking about these together, folks, is that Enter the Dragon came out in August of 1973, the 19th of August, to be specific, in the U.S. But Bruce Lee actually died on July 20th, 1973, before the movie came out. And so we're right kind of in that intersection between the 50th anniversary of Bruce Lee's death and the 50th anniversary of Enter the Dragon's premiere. So it's a good time to talk about both. So I guess my first question is going to be for Joey. When did your relationship with Master Lee start?
Probably when I was 7 or 8 years old was the first time I ever saw, it was Game of Death was my first exposure to Bruce Lee. And I think it must have been my dad rented it from Video Safari and watching it on VHS. And I was just captivated. I was just like, who is this? Just as a 7 year old watching Bruce just beat the crap out of everyone. I was like, this is the greatest person of all time. I need more of this dude in my life.
That is awesome. Joe, when were you first exposed?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. So like growing up, I had been watching martial arts films from a young age like Joey. But I started with like The Karate Kid and Chuck Norris films, ninja movies. I saw all of those long before I saw any Bruce Lee. And to be honest, I don't think I saw Enter the Dragon until probably high school. And maybe around the time that Dragon the Bruce Lee story came out, it might have been around that time, because I was more of like a, I guess, a Jean-Claude Van Damme fan at the time, right?
Yeah.
I just hadn't been exposed to those movies. But once you know, once I saw Enter the Dragon, off like a shot. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So my first exposure, honestly, would have been, you know, early on at like 5 or 6 watching the old Adam West Batman reruns, and because you had crossovers with the Green Hornet where Bruce Lee played Kato and then the Green Hornet. So I think that was probably the first time I saw him on screen. I'm not sure the first time I actually watched any of these movies, you know, actually seen the true Bruce Lee movies, but I'm pretty sure that was the first place I saw him. Now, Bruce Lee is, you know, it's interesting because you look through his life and you have to kind of pick through, and it's hard to separate the legend from the facts, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's been a lot, you know, I'm not going to say intentionally obfuscated or intentionally obscured, but there is a lot of things that are maybe distorted a little bit. You know, he's born in San Francisco. He's a quarter European, you know, went back to Hong Kong. We know that there was racism going on. We know that he was looked down on. And like when he went to train in Wing Chun, actually by Ip Man, right? Then other students wouldn't train with him because he was a quarter European. And so what happened is he got this personal training, which is, you know, kind of awesome and kind of sad at the time, the reason he had to get that, right? Now I know, Joe, you've actually read through his books, the 3 books that Bruce Lee's published. So maybe I'll hand this off to you a little bit to talk on his life a little bit.
Film wise, he was a child star in Hong Kong. I know he was in at least 1 or 2 films there. I don't know, you know, his whole filmography or anything. But in the States, his first thing was the Green Hornet, right? I don't know that he was in Marlow as well. I'm not sure about the timing there. You might know that, Jason. I'm not sure.
I mean, it was just a little bit part there in Marlow, but that was actually, when was Marlow? Marlow was, like, say, he was a child star going back to the 40s. But Marlow's 70 something, 69. So that was later.
Green Hornet first, then.
Yeah.
And then obviously, the Green Hornet became popular in Hong Kong because of his, you know, his role in that show. And then whenever he visited Hong Kong later, that's how he got into The Big Boss, otherwise known as Fist of Fury. And his movie career started, you know, really taking off at that point. As far as his books go, I believe his first kung fu book is called Chinese Gung Fu, The Philosophical Art of Self-Defense. And I have a copy of it here. This was, 1963, this was released.
Okay.
Initially. And this goes, you know, it talks about techniques. Like if you've picked up any like karate manual on the stands, it's very similar. But what is interesting in here is that, I think it's this one. I could be lying. I don't think it's this book, actually. One of his books here, it shows his kind of his daily training schedule.
Sweet.
Must be another one. And it's super interesting. Talks about nutrition. He talks about, you know, his jogging and everything else, not just martial arts. The book that he's most famous for is The Tao of Jeet Kune Do. And like you mentioned earlier, that was released posthumously in 1975, copyright Linda Lee. And this kind of describes basically his own martial art that he created, an amalgamation of different fighting arts, including, you know, judo and boxing. Obviously, Ying Jun, Wing Chun, which was his foundation, but he also drew from savate, the French fighting art, fencing. He borrowed footwork from all of these different places, and really it kind of laid the foundation for what became known as like mixed martial arts, in my opinion. I'm not an expert, but he's one of the first guys that in the modern age that combined all the different arts and created something new with it. it's interesting because, you know, in the Tao Te Ching Do, he talks about taking what works for you and discarding the rest. He discarded rigid forms and that kind of thing in favor of a more fluid system. And I should note that Jeet Kune Do means the way of the intercepting fist. Nice. And one more point, kind of interesting. Sorry.
No, dude. Go.
The famous Japanese swordsman Miyamoto Musashi, who wrote the Book of Five Rings, the Gorin no Sho, he says something similar in that you take what works for you and, you know, ignore the rest. Just kind of like, you know, an interesting parallel of martial arts minds.
Yeah.
I'll shut up.
No, you can keep going if you want. We're not going to go too deep into biography of Bruce Lee. People can look that up. They should go watch Dragon, right? The Bruce Lee story. Mm-hmm. Great movie.
Yep.
There's also, which I haven't watched yet. We were talking about the other night, but there's a Chinese TV show they made on the life of Bruce Lee, and you can find that on Amazon. And it was, Joe, you remember how many episodes that was? It's a lot of episodes.
It was like 30 episodes, I think. And yeah, I haven't watched it either. We just talked about it last night. I intend to. I want to jump into that. Yeah.
Yeah. It gets good reviews, so I do want to check that out. But there are lots of ways to explore. But Bruce Lee, you know, he took the Western world by storm. Now he faced a lot of racism over here too. When you look at like Kung Fu, that was something he had pitched. And then David Carradine ended up starring in it because they didn't want an Asian actor starring in it. To some degree, you have that with the Green Hornet. But there are a lot of projects he's blocked on. And it's a real shame because Enter the Dragon ended up being a huge hit. And it proved he could be a star. The Game of Death, the movie that we see now with Game of Death, isn't necessarily what it would have been if he had survived. You know, Creative Control obviously was, the movie was finished after his death and changes were made and things like that. But he was being set up to be a huge star.
Yeah.
I don't, 32 when let, he died, you know?
Yeah. Let's be, he was an absolute movie star in Enter the Dragon. Like, he kills it, dude. As a leading man movie star, he absolutely nails it.
Yeah, definitely. So let's segue over to Enter the Dragon. And this is, people talk about perfect films and all, and this, you know, depending on your definition, but this is darn near a perfect film. It's one of the fundamental martial arts movies. If you're going to watch martial arts movies, you know, this is I think, Joe, you call it a foundational film we talked about earlier. And this really is there. You know, this is the basis for so many other things. Now, these kind of things were done before over in China and in Hong Kong and the films over there, but for a Western film, because this was a Western film, Western bankrolled film, a Warner Brothers film. This was something new.
This was the first Hollywood kung fu movie, right? Martial arts movie. Absolutely foundational. That's the only word for it, man. It's a masterpiece.
Yeah, it 100% is from the soundtrack with you know that mixture, you that little bit of blaxploitation vibe in there. And to the stars, and we'll go through. We'll talk about the cast is stellar in here. The cinematography is great in here.
Yeah,
as they take it, you know, the shots of Hong Kong and just the fight scenes and the way they do it. There's a little bit of slow motion, but not too much. You know, they ramp between slow motion and then full speed fight in the fights. The plot isn't overly complicated. You can follow it. You know,
yeah, and it's an interesting enough plot, right? Like, it's an awesome, which we'll get into later. But yeah, dude, this movie just knocks it out of the park. To think, like, to be the first, you know, Western martial arts movie for Bruce Lee to come along, and then the movie gets made, and then they just boom, just a home run. It's like it just opened up a whole new vista of movies that could get made.
Yeah, and when you look at this, so this was made for $850,000. So that same year in 1973, you know, if we look at another movie from that year, The Exorcist cost $12 million to make. Look at that discrepancy, right? But up to now, considering video sales and all that, Enter the Dragons grossed probably over 400 million worldwide. It, you know, it's done very well. And if you're looking for a copy of this, folks, you can find it all over, but in 2020, the Criterion Collection released a Bruce Lee set, which has all of his movies in it, including this with a remaster and stuff. And that's what I have. And I think I'd recommend that if you can afford it to go that way. If you don't already have them, it's a very well done Blu-ray set. Although with the 50th anniversary, I think Arrow Films is going to be coming out with a set of Bruce Lee stuff, and Arrow does a great job with their releases. So that may be something also to look at, but so we've talked a little about Bruce Lee. Let's talk about some of the other stars in this movie.
Yeah. We've got
John Saxton. Right? And he was actually double billed with Bruce Lee on this, cause they weren't sure if this Asian actor could carry it, so they put this white guy up there with him. But John Saxton was he's an established actor, and he had been a teen idol and a solid actor up through here, and he knew martial arts. So this is a movie where your three leads in the movie all really did know martial arts, unlike a lot of movies where your actors are faking it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. It's interesting, I guess this kind of a side tangent, mm-hmm. that, you know, during Bruce Lee's time in Hollywood, he started teaching martial arts to a lot of different people. And I clearly Bruce Lee had an impact on mainstream martial arts, the popularity of martial arts and that kind of thing through his films. But within that, I guess within the circles that he was in, clearly something drew those people to him. And they sought him out as an instructor, a philosopher teacher, right? Super interesting. But I don't know that John Saxton, did he learn martial arts from Bruce Lee, or was it?
He had trained. I have to look. He might have trained with him some, but he knew him separately. He had done judo and karate and stuff before. I'd have to.
Okay.
He had a black belt in Shotokan karate.
Interesting.
And he was proficient in judo. So
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Jim Kelly, our other star, who this is really his breakout role. So Jim Kelly was in a movie before this. He was in Melinda, which is actually a really important blaxploitation film, but he didn't have a big role in that. But he's a co-star of the movie, one of your three big stars, and this was really his break. In fact, I'm pretty sure the credits say introducing Jim Kelly, but he had his own karate studio and he had trained people, and that's kind of how he got this gig. Because somebody else was supposed to play the role of Williams, and they dropped out at the last minute, and somebody said, "Hey, no, why don't we get Jim Kelly?" And
I believe that by the time this started filming, he was a karate champion, international karate champion. Mm-hmm. Let me pull up his page real quick.
Jim Kelly was
had a karate studio in French Hill in Los Angeles.
He
Long Beach International Karate Championships, world middleweight, mm-hmm. 1971.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and he's a natural actor in this, the camera loves him. And he's
charismatic.
Yeah. It's
Dude. Charismatic is all get out. He's smooth, man. Him and Bruce. Totally. They're just so smooth in this movie. It's awesome to see, man. Yeah. Their charisma just exudes off the screen when you're watching those two. Saxton is cool, but Kelly and Lee just steal the show whenever they're on the screen.
Absolutely.
Definitely. 100%. So the way the script was written, Roper, Saxton's character, was supposed to die, not Williams. But Saxton's agent, and that's But it worked out okay. It worked. But But to go to Joe's point, Bruce Lee had really gotten in Hollywood, and and not just with actors. I mean, he had made friends and video like Ed Parker, you know, Kenpo, mm-hmm. American Kenpo Karate,
yep.
And all those. And obviously what he was doing was the real deal, because he had, you know, real people that really respected me, getting like working with like Chuck Norris and things like that. Yeah. But, you know, some of his biggest students were like James Cogburn. And in fact, yeah. James Cogburn was one of his pallbearers, as was Steve McQueen.
That's right.
So, but yeah, so getting back. Yeah. So this is Jim Kelly's first movie, first big movie. And, mm-hmm. and like Joe said, or Joey said, Jim Kelly just, he's, you know, he steals the camera every time he's on there. He's great. The camera loves him, and he's great in this.
I love his intro. The beginning of the film, when they introduce each different main character, they have their own story and their own background, and his is just perfect, man. It's like a little blaxploitation film in and of itself, right? And mm-hmm. then, you know, the next thing we see is him, you know, in Hong Kong, you know, coming up the street or whatever.
Yeah, because he's got to get out because he beats the crap out of those two corrupt cops, dude.
Yeah,
yeah, man.
He's got to flee the country, man. That scene is so good, dude.
Right. And you see, and they give you just enough backstory where just a dropped line where he and Roper had served together in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you knew they were war buddies, and that'll come in kind of, you'll see that later in the movie where that'll come in. Yeah. But, and you can tell they've worked together. We'll see that later in the movie when they're doing a little betting scheme. And
oh, that's right.
Yeah. And it's just so well done. Let's hit the cast and then.
So
we've talked about our three stars here without a doubt, but you know, this movie has so many great people in here. We have, and I'm going to, Joe can probably pronounce his name, but Hans played by, we'll let Joe fill that out.
I don't actually know. Let me see. Han Shikien, probably.
There we go. Didn't do a lot of Western movies, but he's great in this. I mean, he would fit right in as a James Bond villain. He fits
totally.
A great job in here. Although, interestingly enough, his voice is dubbed by Key Luke, who we know is Master Po in Kung Fu from the TV series. And he was, and he was grandfather in the Gremlins films. He's the old grandfather in the Gremlins.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. All the secrets are coming out here. Jason's the film historian over here.
Yeah. He dives deep, man. He gets the fun facts.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. Playing, Sue Lee. And we'll definitely talk about the scene playing Lee's sister. Cause you know, our main characters are just known by the last name. So Bruce Lee is Lee, John Sackman is Roper, and Jim Kelly's Williams. But Lee's sister is played by Angela Mao Ying, who's a great martial artist in her own right. She was in dozens of martial arts movies. You can see those, real famous female martial artists, and she does a great job in here. Small part, but you know, an important one. We get Bob Wall, who's a well known. You see him, you know, martial artist. Mm-hmm. He's in a lot of things. He's one of the heavies. We have Bolo Young in here. He's great.
And he's in everything.
Yeah, another movie. I'll mention him in a little bit later as well. We just, you know, great stuff. We have Sammo Hung as a part here in the beginning. The initial fight with Bruce Lee is Sammo Hung.
Yeah.
Jackie Chan pops up as a henchman later on who gets taken.
Twice, out. Actually. He gets killed twice in the same movie. He gets
killed twice, yeah.
Nice, man. Get your money's worth for that guy.
Yeah. So you've got some great stuff, you know, some other minor things like Roper's assistant, who we see on the golf course. That's Marlene Clark, who is a, you know, great actress. She co-starred with Jim Brown in Slaughter. She actually died earlier this year, the same day that Jim Brown died, Marlene Clark died.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. I think May 18th, I think was, but yeah. So, but she was a pretty well-known actress, although she has just a small part in here. So there's, Yeah, it's a really good cast, and everybody does a good job. Now, there's a lot. This was all filmed in Hong Kong, and there's a lot of local talent and a lot of extras and things like that. And I'll tell you what I like with that is you get to see they do just kind of get the crowds off the street, and you you know, it's a very colorful cast and the extras, and you see like regular people. They're not trying to get the people or on any of that. You're seeing some really interesting looking folks, right? And
you really see that in that the dinner scene when they it's just like what an interesting party, man.
Yeah.
There's everything going on. There's music, there's entertainment.
Tumblers.
Yeah.
Right.
Super cool.
Sumo wrestlers. There's all kinds of stuff. It's really, really well done. So I think unless anybody wants to say anything else, I guess really quickly we should mention before we go into plot, we can talk soundtrack. I'd mention just real quickly, Lyle Schifrin is the one that did the soundtrack, and he's probably best known for things like the Mission Impossible theme. He did that. He did this. He did Amityville Horror. He did the Dirty Harry movies. He did Bullet. Yeah, there's other things, but
yeah, the soundtrack is great. Like, it always fits when it's time for him to be a spy. The soundtrack is very like James Bondy, Mission Impossible. When it's fighting time, it's very fighty. It's just a really, really good soundtrack and score.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Jason said, it's kind of a mix of genres. Like, you get a little bit of that sort of like 70s soul, along with like the hints of like traditional Chinese, instruments and whatnot. It's incredibly well done. Yeah.
We should mention the director, Robert Klaus, who, you know, he didn't make a lot of movies, interesting enough. He made a handful of movies. He made a lot of action movies. He did this, and then he did like Black Belt Jones. He did The Ultimate Warrior, which I highly recommend. If you haven't seen that, it's a Yul Brynner stars in it. It's a post-apocalypse in the far future of 2012 in New York. And it's pretty great. But he finished The Game of Death. He finished Game of Death after Bruce Lee's death and did that. He did Gymkhana, China Brown. Sorry to break in here, folks. I was editing this and I meant to say China O'Brien, not China Brown. China O'Brien, I think he did both the first and second, which of course are Cynthia Rothrock vehicles. Okay, back to the recording. He most important to me, he did one episode of The Master, but no, he actually also did a biography, Bruce Lee, that was heavily leaned on for Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. It's called Bruce Lee, the Biography, and it was published in 1989.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So he was the director. I think as far as the filming stuff, like the background stuff, this isn't really a analysis kind of show. So I don't know that we need to go a whole lot deeper. We definitely can if you want to. But otherwise, I think we talk about the kind of go through the movie and talk about the cool scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm ready.
Well, as Joey mentioned, we get introduced to our characters very well. You know, we start off meeting Lee, and he's there, he's training with in Shaolin. We get to see him talk to his master. You get to see him fight Sammo Hung, and this espionage agent comes, or well, a man with the intelligence group, group that just takes information.
They just get information. They don't send in troops or anything. They make it very clear. They just collect info.
Right, right.
That's why they
make a phone call. Right,
right.
He's like, don't call me.
That's so good, dude.
There's a radio on the island. We'll be monitoring it on the chance that you can get to it.
And then you'll come.
Someone will. We aren't an agency of enforcement. We function as gatherers of information, evidence, upon which interested governments can act.
I see. If there's any trouble, you make a phone call.
He recruits him, but before he leaves, then he's told, oh, by the way, you know, these guys also murdered your sister.
The tells him, informs him that it was Bob Wall that, you know, is the villain, basically.
Yeah. Right. And we get this great flashback. And the fight with Sammo Hung's great. But and also during the scene, we get a lot of Bruce Lee philosophy, where it's like this young student comes over and he's talking to the student, and
teaching philosophy. And throughout this movie, you know, it's kind of peppered with Bruce Lee's philosophy at different parts throughout the movie, you know,
absolutely,
which is great. But we go to this fight scene. It's a flashback, and it's really, once the old man gets knocked out, I mean, it's just kind of speculative because nobody really knows, but the whole fight. But we get to see Lee's sister, again, played by Angela Mao, in this wonderful fight where everybody loves John Wick 4 and the overhead fights and stuff. But you get that here, earlier, right?
And, multi-level fight. Absolutely. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's good tracking shot, great action.
Yeah, she's using all the environment. She's kicking things at these people. She's jumping through windows. I mean, we said foundational, right? I mean, this is in every kung fu movie now. Like, you see it, this kind of thing is everywhere. But this is where it came from, as far as I know. Yeah. I mean, maybe there was some other film that it's drawing on. And you see it all through Jackie Chan's films, right? He's always using the environment and things. Right. Yeah, absolutely. And again, if Jim Kelly's introduction is like a mini film, so is this.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And she's getting chased by like 12 dudes or something. Like a whole ton of dudes are chasing her, and she's just running and flipping and kicking and knocking them down, and then they just get back up and keep chasing her. It's such a good scene.
And nobody will help her, you know, that the old lady sees her being chased, she shuts the window.
Yeah, it sets the stage, right? Everybody's afraid of these guys. Nobody wants to cross these dudes, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. So she finally ends up committing suicide instead of letting them take her. And so, like I say, a small part by Angela Mao, but she does a great job in this. And we get, like you mentioned, the flashbacks for Williams and Roper. Williams, corrupt cops are, you can't go to Hawaii, and you're not going there. And, you know, they try to take his passport, and, well, that doesn't go very well for him.
Yeah, he chops their nightstick in half, and it's all on him.
Yep.
And then the dog eats the cop, basically.
Yeah, he kicks he kicks the one officer through the fence, and there's a vicious dog behind the fence, and the dog just latches onto him. And,
it's a very satisfying scene. That's good. And then Roper, then we meet Roper.
Yeah, and Roper's there playing golf. He's a big gambler, you know, wants to bet on everything. And a couple heavies show up, and they're like, you know, we're here to collect some money. And he, you know, whoops all their butts, but he realizes he needs to get out of here because the heat's going up. So that's but we're introduced where he's willing to bet on everything. And so it's all it's these interviews are great because you get insight into their characters.
And you get with Roper, you get the sense that he's, he's not always on the up and up. You don't really know what his, you get back to it later, but you don't know what his limits are, right?
Right.
It's kind of like left up in the air. Like, is this guy maybe going to be a bad guy? You know?
Yeah. So we're not, we haven't hit the 30-minute mark, but we've got our cast. We're in Hong Kong, and we're getting on the boats to go to Han's Island. Cause the reason the intelligence agency is recruiting Lee is every 3 years. So our bad guy's Mr. Han, he's a big drug dealer, big human trafficker. You know, everything that's bad, he does. And
it's funny, even back in 73, when they were making this movie, they knew that people who owned islands were bad, bad people that did bad, bad stuff. Like, even back then, they knew that. That's not a new thing.
That's right. And maybe the worst thing, though, is he took the Shaolin Temple's, you know, secrets, and he's putting them to evil use. And that's kind of why the main reason that Lee's teacher's like, you know, you need to go stop this, because he's using our secrets for evil instead of good.
And that's another trope that shows up in so many movies, right? You know, how many Jet Li films where he's, you know, the Shaolin monk, and he's their temple's been betrayed by somebody on the inside or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
So even in G.I. Joe with Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow,
there we go.
You know, you get that trope where the student betrays the master, and then the other student has to go chase down that student. Like, we keep getting back to it, but foundational, man. It set the stage for so much.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. So Han holds a contest every 3 years, a martial arts tournament, and he gets martial artists from all over the world to come to his island and they fight. And that's really all we know at the moment. You know, we're going to learn later that he uses this to recruit new muscle into his organization or new people into his organization. We all meet in the harbor there in Hong Kong, you know, beautiful. And this is a Hong Kong that's not there anymore. Now you have high rises and skyscrapers and modern boats and things, but so they and other contestants, they're going to be in the contest. They get on this boat to go out to the island. And one of them is this really cocky Australian guy.
I love this guy. This is an iconic scene, man.
Yeah.
Watch your style.
Yeah.
Guy.
Yeah. Joe, go ahead and describe it. It's a great scene.
Oh yeah. So, they're on this classic sort of Chinese junk. And you know, you have your fellows that are the sailors, they're moving some boxes around and running the boat. And there's this Australian martial artist. Now, I don't know his name, honestly.
He was, so this part was written for him by Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee,
okay.
Really known him and said, hey, I'm going to get you a part in the movie. His name is Peter Archer is the actor.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Character. I guess New he's Zealand. The, he's not Australian. So Jules is going to yell at us.
Oh, dude, Jules is so mad.
But you know what? No, because when I go to Wikipedia, it says Australian entrepreneur and martial arts champion. But then when you go to the Wikipedia for Enter the Dragon, it says he's an arrogant New Zealand martial artist. So he's an Australian playing a New Zealander. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe he's both.
Anyway.
So what he's basically intimidating these guys, he's basically bullying the crew. Mm-hmm. So classic Bruce Lee. You know, he's full of confidence. He goes over and he lets that confidence go, and he kind of like leans on the railing, makes himself look weak. And here comes Parsons, starts messing with him, and basically,
what's your style?
My style?
You can call it the art of fighting without fighting.
The art of fighting without fighting? Show me some of it.
You know, Bruce is like, yeah, I'll fight you, but we need some more room. Why don't we take this boat over that island? And of course, Parsons is an idiot. He goes down into the boat and, and you know, Bruce just like kind of like lets the boat go. And it has to like, you know, trail along behind the ship, which is great. Like that guy's.
And he tells him, he tells, if you try and climb up this rope, I'll let the rope go. And then you'll be in the middle of the boat. Like, don't try and climb up. You're taking this punishment, man.
And this is the art of fighting
without fighting.
It worked out great. So there actually was the reason that boat gains water that quick. There was actually a hole in the boat. They didn't realize it initially when they start filming the scene.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So one thing, folks, you might notice when you watch this movie is these movies, when they made them over there, they filmed them without sound and they dubbed in the voices later. So this is a movie where most of the scenes are dubbed in later. And that's the case with this one. But anyway, the actor playing Parsons, Peter Archer, the martial artist actor, he knew how to swim, and he told him, don't stop filming, keep filming, I can swim, it's okay. And so that's why you see like the boat filling up with water and stuff. And so they just kept rolling and got that.
Yeah, that's super.
That's amazing. Wow.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
On the boat, we also get Lee gets a chance to size up Roper. A fight between praying mantises that's being bet on, you know, like
yeah, that's brutal, dude. They get
like cockfighting with praying mantises.
Yeah, they get good close-ups on this praying mantis fight. These two mantises are going at it, man.
Yeah
there's no PETA here. Animals or insects, I guess, were hurt.
I don't think PETA protects insects.
Yeah,
this maybe they do
later on too. But Lee, you know, bets with Roper and Lee wins the, you know, money off Roper in this bet. So he's kind of sizing him up during.
Yeah, we get an introduction, like you said earlier, that Roper and Williams, they know each other. They get to talk a little bit. We're given their hint of their backstory together. And that all happens on the boat on the way to Han's Island.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we get to the island. They get off this impressive introduction. We meet Anna Capri, who's Tania or Tana. I don't know if they ever said her name during the movie.
Is that Lee's contact on the island?
No, this is the blonde.
Oh, no, that's
That's the blonde. Okay, yeah.
This is the blonde, and she's Han's secretary, and she ends up, you know, hooking up with Roper later on. Now, her brother was the voice of Charlie Brown in the Peanuts specials, by the way.
Get out.
Yeah, so that's an important piece of trivia.
How do you?
But
it's little tidbits.
Yeah.
Holy crap, man.
Yeah,
but she meets them, brings them into the brings them in, tells them, hey, the party's at 8 or reception's at 8. So they come down to the party. And it's a party that Joe Star described, this great party where you have everything in there, like all of us were talking about. You have sumo wrestlers and
tumbling and stuff.
Tumbling and
and
all kinds of crazy stuff during this party. And they obviously based the party. Deathstalker was obviously copied off this movie. You have a tournament and the party in Deathstalker, minus the orc in there who's eating the roasted pig, which is the pig-faced orc eating the roasted pig in Deathstalker. But they based that party, no doubt, on this, right? I mean, it's pretty obvious. But
yeah, totally.
Yeah, but Han makes his appearance, and he's suitably, he seems kind of unassuming, but obviously he's going to be more than he seems. And they do this little gag there at the end where he starts throwing apples up in the air, and the girls are throwing like knives at
bodyguards.
Him. Yeah, his bodyguards, they have knives hidden on them. They're throwing and spearing the apples in the air, and one of those is Lee's contact. Is a female agent who'd been sent on the island before, and Lee manages to catch the apple which will come in later.
So that's Mei Ling, right?
Yeah. Mei Ling,
played by Betty Chung. And so after the party, they all go back to their rooms, and then we have the Miss Capri, the secretary. She's bringing the women around to the rooms for them to pick from. So we show up in William's room. He's like, well, I'll take you, and you. If I miss somebody, I've had a long day. It's nothing personal.
I'm tired, dude. Take four chicks, dude. Oh, yeah. So good.
For me? You shouldn't. But I'll take you, darling. And you. And you. And you. Please understand, if I missed anyone, it's been a big day. I'm a little tired.
Of course, Mr. Williams. You must conserve your strength.
Over to Roper's room, and Roper's like, oh, I've already chosen. I want you. And she goes, oh, that's a wise
decision, right?
Yeah. The wise decision.
Yeah.
She says, man. Because before that, Roper's talking about how a woman like her could teach you some things.
Would you look at that? Woman like that could teach you a lot about yourself.
Yeah, and Bruce Lee's like kind of giggling when he says,
"Yeah,
that's right."
He sizes him up, and then they get to Bruce Lee, and Bruce Lee's like, "I want the woman that threw this dart."
Yep.
Yeah, and she comes in, and then he's able to find out, well, what's going on, and she hasn't found out a whole lot. She tells him what she knows. And he's there to get any kind of evidence he can. And we know that, firearms aren't allowed on the island because Han's had a bad experience with them before. And we know that there's a radio somewhere on the island. And so when he gets evidence against Han, he's supposed to radio for help. And then his contact will pick up the phone and make a phone call to somebody and hopefully send him help. Right. So,
It's kind of a crapshoot,
right? Like, it's he's never promised that they'll help him. They just sort of imply that they might, that they probably will.
Yeah,
he didn't sign a W-2, man.
Yeah.
Jason breaking in again. Here on out, you're going to hear us talk about, did they go out the first night on the island, the second night of the island? And honestly, when I was taking the sound clips for this episode, I think our chronology is off. I don't think they went out the first night. I think the second night's the first time they go out. But, you know, it's not that important. But if you hear us say they went out or a certain thing happened a certain night into the event, into the movie, and we're wrong, then sorry about that. Okay, back to the show. And so I don't remember, did he go out the first night or did he wait till the second night to...
He goes out the first night.
He goes out first the first night. So that very first night, Bruce Lee is going to start scouting around the island. So he puts on his black bodysuit. He's got his bag with rope in there, you know, because you always need your rope, you know, whether it's Doc Saints or whether it's Enter the Dragon, you have to have your rope, right? And so we go out, and at the same time, Williams goes out, or... You know, Jim Kelly goes out, and Jim Kelly, the women that are with him, tell him, "Oh, you're not allowed out there." And he's like, "No, I'll go where I want to go."
Right.
Much, yeah. And he's just,
straight up tells.
Yep. So he's out there practicing his kata, doing his thing, and the guards see him out there, you know, and he like waves to the guard and stuff. This is Williams, but Lee's sneaking around, and he finds a secret
Williams sees him.
Go ahead.
William sees him too. Yeah.
Yeah, he does. He does. William sees him and goes, "Oh, there's a human fly. Look at that." And
that's right.
But Bruce Lee manages to find a secret entrance to the lair, which, you know, it's kind of underground, this underground headquarters. He goes down there. There's this guard walking around down there and this is one of the, so this movie, it's fast moving. It's well paced. And there's always something interesting going on the screen, right? So even here, we have a guard walking around this little area. He's kind of like swinging nunchucks around. He hits, you know, he hits this bronze statue. He's like, "Oh crap!" And he face and you know, it's like kind of like a Barney Fife kind of thing. You know, he's like, and so Lee kind of investigates a little bit, and then he sneaks back, and well, he ends up getting in a skirmish with the guards, but he lays them out pretty quick before they can
escape. Right.
Yeah. And like I say, a guard does see Williams and he just waves at him. So the next morning, Lee is interrupted by Bob Wall, who's O'Hara, who's the one that with the scar who would, you know, ended up killing, was the reason his sister committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And although I don't know if they ever established, did they ever establish they knew Lee, that connection? That's a question I have. We'll ask that here in a minute.
Yeah, like in the briefing, they show pictures of Bob Wall's character.
Bruce Lee knew who Bob Wall was.
Right.
Yeah. Bob Wall and Han know Bruce Lee's connection.
I don't think so.
Because
the
initial bout puts Bruce Lee against Bob Wall.
That's right. But we don't really know what Han knows, right? Like he's a mystery.
Exactly. Yeah. So he tells him, "You got to put your uniform on and come down to the ceremony. Everybody's going to come down to the ceremony." You know, Bruce Lee's like, "No, out of my room." Because
he looks really angry too. He's like, "Get the hell out of here."
Yeah. And he doesn't put the uniform on. He's like, you know, "Screw you guys."
No.
Right.
But they go down there for the opening ceremony, and we have our opening bouts, and you know they go really well. Did Williams end up fighting Parsons, the New Zealand guy? Either he or Roper.
It was Williams.
Yeah, and he just wipes the floor with him. But he's taking bets on the side. He's got this guy, you know, sitting back behind him with, you know, wearing glasses, and he's betting with him. And so he wins some money, and then it's Roper's turn, and Roper hands the money to Williams and says, "Hey, I got this guy back here, you know, keep it going." And Roper takes a couple falls from his opponent until this guy keeps wanting to make a bet with Williams.
And Roper keeps looking back at Williams to see if the bet's happened yet. He keeps looking back.
Come on. Yeah, and he keeps taking the fall. And, yep. And finally, Williams gets the bet, and then Roper just boom. Just
yeah.
Now, going back, Jason, is there a morning edification that first day, or is that the second day?
You're right. I'm sorry. We skipped over that. So we open up.
The guards that let Lee get away.
Takes care of them. No, 100%. You're right. So the ceremony opens up with Han saying, you know, some of you decided to not listen to the rules. And, you know, we provided you all this, but they decided that wasn't enough. And they've skirted around my island. But we're not going to worry about that right now. The problem now is my guards let me down. And they have to prove their worthiness to stay among us. And so these guards are kind of, you know, by the students are kind of thrown in the middle. And Bolo comes out, you know, who, you know, well known as the Chinese Hercules and those kind of movies. And folks, you would know him maybe from Bloodsport. He's the bad guy in Bloodsport, right? Yeah. But anyway, Bolo comes out and he just rips. These guards try to fight him, but he just one by one kills them all. And kind of mercilessly.
And everybody's watching this happen.
Yeah.
Like, we're learning something about how Han runs things, right? Like,
yeah. And Han looked, and Williams has like a disgusted look on his face, and Han looks at him, you know, goes, "Oh, do you not approve of this, Williams?" And Williams like, "Just how sloppy your man is."
Yeah. It's just such a great supervillain thing to do, right? Like, you know that the heroes did something wrong, but you don't punish the heroes. You make them watch your minions get murdered. And it's like, this is your fault. You know, like, it's such a supervillain thing to do. I love it.
Yep. Yeah, it's great. So we have those fights. And then Lee, did he fight this day or no? I don't remember.
No. He fights Bob Wall. No, is that the second day?
I think that's the second day.
Okay. I think
you're right, actually. Yeah, I think that's right.
Or does he get captured the second night? He gets captured I think this day fights Bob Wall, because the second night. Yeah, I think he fights
The second day of bouts, John Saxon fights Bolo.
Right. Yeah. So this happened. So he fought Bob Wall the first day. Lee did. Okay. And so.
Yeah.
Well, and that's kind of why. Well, why are they put? You know, I wonder what Han knows, because he's putting him against O'Hara. But and he just, you know, he knows O'Hara's the reason his sister died, and O'Hara never has a chance. I mean, Bruce Lee. Right. He's taken to town.
It's like a demonstration of Bruce Lee's speed, right? Like, he's just so fast. And he said O'Hara has no chance. No chance.
No.
And he tries to break some bottles and attack Lee, you know, dishonorably, basically. And Han puts an end to it. And, you know, I think that might be the last time we see him, right? Or he dies.
Well, Han, he yells at him, but he doesn't stop. But Bruce Lee kills him. He yells at him to stop, but Han or O'Hara ignores him. And Bruce Lee taking him out. But yeah, Bruce Lee does a great job. And, you know, that scene, just really impressive fight. And then Han's like, "Oh, he's disgraced us all," and he kind of goes off after that. And I think that's the end of the fights that we see there.
Right.
And then the second night, Bruce Lee goes out again, and this time
this is where he catches the snake.
No, he. Yeah, yeah, the.
Because they've put a cobra where his secret entrance is, so now he has to deal with that. Catches the snake, puts it in the.
There might be three nights. We're not doing a good job, are we, listeners? So
I haven't watched this for a while.
There's two or three nights, because there's. I think we have one more night where. No, because Bruce Lee gets captured the next time he goes underneath.
Yeah. So after the bouts. Williams is called to Han's office.
Right.
And Han has to bring him in as one of his guys. Williams isn't having anything to do with that. He says, "Man, you come right out of a comic book," and they fight. And I think this is where we get the hint of Han's hand being like iron, right?
Yeah.
And he kills Williams.
Yeah, that's right. So after Bruce Lee kills O'Hare and it breaks up, then Roper tells Williams, hey, come back to my room. We'll talk about this. And one of the women tell Williams to go to Han's study. So Williams goes to Han's study and Han basically says, you know, why did you kill my guards? And he goes, I didn't kill your guards. Somebody else was out there last night. And Han goes, you'll tell me who it is. He goes, I want to leave your island. And then a bunch of Han's guys come in the room. Williams takes them all out.
Mr. Han?
You fought well yesterday. Your style is unorthodox, but effective. It is not the art, but the combat that you enjoy.
The winning.
We are all ready to win, just as we are born knowing only life. It is defeat that you must learn to prepare for.
I don't waste my time with it. When it comes, I won't even notice.
Oh, how so?
I'll be too busy looking good.
What were you looking for when you attacked my guards?
Wasn't me.
You were the only man outside the palace.
I was outside, but I wasn't the only one.
You will tell me who else.
Mr. Han, suddenly I like to leave your island.
It is not possible.
Bullshit, Mr. Handman. Man, you come right out of a comic book.
And then Han stands up to fight Williams. And he's got, we find out that, you know, he's got, because we see it at the end of the fight. He's got almost like a solid lead fist or something, a hand or something.
That's right.
He's got a prosthetic hand. Although up to this point, it's been fully mobile.
Right.
You know, it's a pretty good prosthetic. Every time he hits Williams, it's obviously like an iron hand. He ends up killing Williams. And it's interesting. You have to wonder if John Woo watched the scene, because they start fighting in Han's office and there's a cage of doves, and Han breaks open the cage of doves with his hand. And then there are doves flying around during the fight in the office.
Yeah. Cause John Woo is always using doves. Yeah.
Yeah. Although most time on those, you're seeing pigeons, not doves on those sets in those movies. But then he knocks Williams into basically the harem area where all the women are in there and they're all getting high and they're all laughing as Han's basically beating Williams to death. Roper gets called to talk to Han and he tries to recruit Roper. He wants to recruit Roper, and he's showing him the business. He's showing him opium. He's showing him the human trafficking, all this different stuff. And then Roper sees Williams' body hanging there. And Han said, I need to show you everything and to make sure that we understand each other. And Roper tells him, no, we totally understand each other. There's no misunderstanding. I think he says, no, there's no misunderstanding or something like that. Yeah. And he knows that he doesn't want anything to do with Han, but if he doesn't agree, he's going to end up like Williams. Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And then that night is when, so the second night is when Lee goes out again, and he goes back to the trap door, and there's a cobra on this trap door now. So he puts the cobra in the bag that he had the rope in, and he goes down, and because he ends up using that cobra to get into the radio room, because he puts it through the door, and the guards, throw a chair out the window and they dive out, And so then Lee goes and he
great reaction.
Right. Like, is that your reaction if a crazy snake comes in? Well, you're jumping out windows.
I don't know, dude. You're stuck in the room with a cobra. What do you do?
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah. That's it. And then Lee just steps on the cobra, he just steps on its head, and he sends radio transmission but it sets off an alarm. And so we have this running fight where Lee's fighting the guards and he's beating the heck out of these guards. It's a great fight, you know, and some of it's unarmed. Some of it, he's using weapons. He gets a hold of nunchucks at one point, you know, and he's great. But finally he gets caught in a trap where like a wall, you know, enters the hallway and like a wall comes down and then a wall comes in another. It's like a three-way hallway and these iron doors down. Yeah, and trap him. And so he just puts the nunchucks around his neck and sits down and waits. And, you know.
That's perfect. Also a perfect reaction.
Yeah.
And through this, we've kind of skimmed over, but we see like a medical facility where they're getting the women that have been kidnapped that they're going to be sold later. We see where they're getting them addicted to drugs. And we see men that they've captured to do experiments on. And like I say, we've seen them making the drugs. I don't know if that's how you make drugs in big woks or whatever, but that's how they're.
I guess it's opium. I don't know.
Yeah.
You like boil it in like a wok. I don't know. But yeah, it's that whole scene, especially whenever he's kind of like, he brings Roper down there and he's trying to introduce him. You can see just kind of how nefarious a Han really is, right?
Well, and he has a thing, you know, he's like, well, you know, I want to see how far you'll go. And he has a guillotine there. And, you know, this is before they get down into the inner workings, you know, and Roper's like, you want me to put my head on there? And he goes, I want to see, you know, what your level of trust is. And William says, I don't have a high level of trust.
And Han has a cat there.
Yeah. Han has this white cat, just like Blofeld. And he puts the cat in the guillotine. You know, and he grabs the handle and Roper picks the cat up and tells the cat, you know, you only have 8 lives left, and he lets it go. And but the handle actually lowers them down. It's actually a control for the elevator. But a great scene though. Really great scene.
Oh, yeah. And a great place to put a secret lever if you ever need a secret lever place in one of your games. There you go. Make it a handle for a guillotine.
Yeah, how many people are really going to pull the lever to throw the
game? Right, exactly, man. Yeah. Like it's genius, dude.
No, it really is. And his secret hideout looks great. You know, it's, we didn't talk about, but when they enter the island, when they first get there, you've got you know a number of different courtyards because you're kind of do this aerial overview, and you've got Han's army there, martial. They're all, you know, in gis, and they're all practicing martial arts and fighting and doing organized practice
it's like a castle almost, right? Like it's this huge
it's great.
They talk about it was like a military emplacement during like World War II that got abandoned or something. I think that's the story behind the behind the facility. That's why it looks like such a fortress, because during World War II it was. That's what the intel guide tells Lee at one point, I think.
Yeah, Braithwaite, who's played by Joffrey Weeks, he says, well, after the war, we weren't sure who owned the island, and Han bought it. I mean, I have a hard time thinking that they wouldn't have divvied up the island to somebody, but but it works for the story. It's good enough for the story. But anyway, Bruce Lee's captured. So, and then we kind of cut to black. And we cut to black the next morning. Roper's coming to the ceremony, you know, the morning ceremony. And we see Lee is standing there with his arms tied behind him next to Bolo. And everybody's there waiting. And the guards are being kind of rough with Roper pushing him down there. And so this, Joe, is our second, what was the term?
Edification.
Yeah. Because Han wants Roper to prove himself by killing Lee.
Yeah.
And Roper said, you know, I said there's, you know, a point I won't go. And you know, we've hit that point. Yeah. And he goes, well, fine, then you'll fight Bolo. And Roper actually, and Bruce Lee steps forward to fight Bolo for him. And Roper's like, no, I got this. And he did. He was able to handle Bolo, you know, impressive enough.
Totally.
He's Bolo, no mean guy. He's and I guess we should give him full credit. It's Yang Zi. I'm probably pronounced that.
So,
but he's an impressive martial artist of his own right. He's in a lot of movies. And he definitely looks the part. I mean, I definitely wouldn't want to fight the guy.
No.
I know, right?
Yeah. He's a big boy.
Yeah, he's impressive. Yeah. But, you know, Roper takes him out, and that, you know, infuriates Han. And Han's like, no, kill them. And he starts yelling orders and sending groups of his guys. And Roper and Lee are just taking his guys out. But at the same, so one thing we skipped over is Mei Ling, who was the other operative that Bruce Lee had hooked up with, who was there earlier, the female operative. When Roper's brought out and told to kill Lee, we see Mei Ling walk in the background. She catches Lee's eyes, and they have like this glance at each other. And she goes down into the dungeon and opens up the cells and lets the prisoners out.
Yeah.
So while Lee and Roper are fighting all the guards, the prisoners start barreling out of the dungeons and they start fighting all the guards. And they have this big, huge fight where everybody's fighting each other. Yeah. It's pretty great.
Yeah, it's
it's a great scene. I mean, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joey.
No, you go.
No, I was just saying, they really, once again, we see all those different courtyards and all of this action is just all over the place. There's fights everywhere. At some point, the prisoners kind of like outnumber everybody else. So there's like three guys beating up on one guard, you know?
Yeah. and Han is watching this, and Han's like, screw this. And he opens up this box. And he pulls out this clawed hand that has fur on the back of it. I don't know. It's supposed to be a wolf claw or something, or a bear claw.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's kind of a flat hand, but it's got claws and it's got fur on the back. He puts that on and he starts taking out these prisoners with it, you know, swiping people across the face with it and fighting them. Yeah. And finally, you know, he ends up seeing Bruce Lee and they fight for a little bit. His hand gets stuck. Bruce Lee kind of kicks him, knocks him back. And Han runs for the interior of the castle and Lee follows him.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and his hand comes off, right? That claw.
Yeah, yeah. He loses hand.
In the chair or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And but by the time Lee catches him inside the castle, because he has to fight a couple guards on the way, by the time Lee catches him, Han is in his trophy room. We didn't mention his trophy room before. He showed this to Roper. And he's got, like, you know, it's kind of like Batman. If you go back to Tim Burton's Batman, where he has a room with all the different kinds of armor and stuff in there. Well, Han has something kind of like that, and it's got all kinds of hands in there. And in fact, we even see a skeletal hand that's probably Han's hand.
Yes, it's his hand, right?
Yeah.
That's the assumption, at least, yeah.
Yeah.
But Han ends up, he has this other clawed hand that's, you know, like Wolverine claws or something. You know, he clamps on there, these big, huge claws, and he puts that on, and he confronts Bruce Lee, and they're fighting. And there's all these weapons around, but Bruce Lee doesn't grab a weapon. He's just fighting him hand to hand, holding his own, you know, easily. And he gets cut a couple times, but it's a great fight. Han ends up grabbing a spear to try to use a spear against him because he's not winning. And Bruce Lee's able to deflect that. And the spear ends up going through a wall and sticking in a wall. And then Han sneaks, he goes through the wall. It's a spinning, you know, like a, what, I don't know,
secret door escape.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it just spins. And, you know, one side's the wall and the other side's mirrors. And Bruce Lee sees him go in there. He waits a second. He kind of cautiously opens up a little bit, looks in there, and he goes in. And now we're in the big mirrored area. And, you know, it's not just a room. Right. It's like a little subsection with a couple rooms and hallways and stuff that's all mirrored. Yeah, I'm sure that they didn't
use it. It's a maze. Like,
yeah,
it's really kind of confusing even to the viewer as to like what the area is, like what it looks like. Like you said, is it hallways or rooms? Like, I wasn't really.
Well, they definitely go around corners. Yeah, there's definitely corners in there, and there's other things in there. It's very effective. The film is very effective, and no doubt, you know, when Conan the Destroyer was made, somebody had seen this movie.
I was just gonna say that's. This is where Conan got that scene from, probably.
Well, to be fair,
maybe not.
To be fair, Howard has this in one of his. Though it's not a Conan story. It's a King Cole story, right? With the mirrors, where you look at the mirror and you.
Oh, the mirrors of Suzanne Thune. I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I don't remember that.
Yeah. To be fair, Howard wrote about a mirror. Yeah, but definitely this is influential, right? And very possibly this is where, but it's a great scene because you have all these mirrors and it's definitely, it's not just a square room. They're, you know, corners and other things. And so Han knows the area and Lee doesn't. So Han's like sneaking up behind him and scratching him and then running away or trying to ambush him. But Lee's still holding his own in this and fighting. And finally, Lee hears his teacher's voice and, you know, say, you know, something about, I forget exactly what he said. But something to the effect of.
It harkens back to his first conversation at the start of the movie with his teacher about you got to close your eyes. That's when you can really fight, is when you don't need to see to fight.
Right. Something and like that. Illusion and all that.
The enemy has only images and illusions behind which he hides his true motives. Destroy the image and you will break the enemy.
And so Lee starts breaking the mirrors and then finally breaks enough mirrors and he sees Han and he's able to kicks Han. Finally, he hits Han, he kicks him. And Han, of course, goes back and impales himself on that spear. And then Lee just walks out of the room and doesn't even look back at him.
Yep.
Yeah, and he's like exhausted, right? He comes out, looks around, and everybody's still out there. There's a couple of like knots of people like fighting.
But it's pretty much over. Most of them are sitting down. Roper's just sitting there surveying the damage. We see Han's secretary. She's there dead on the ground and most of them are dead. And now at the end here, finally, the helicopters come in, the cavalry now show up, you know, the helicopters come in with the Hong Kong police or self-defense force or whatever it is in Hong Kong, you know, they show up and you know, that's the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Roll credits. Right.
Yeah. But
that's classic, man.
And I don't know how long we've been recording, but you know, probably in about as long as we've been recording, you know, this all pans out, but it's just so well shot. And a lot of this is Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee didn't like the original script and, you know, it was originally titled something else. And Bruce Lee really leaned on him to change these things and add in his things into the script. And they did.
And it's better for it.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
The fact they listened to him, you know, was very good because this turned out to be an amazing movie. And
yeah,
you have to wonder how good Game of Death would have been if he had survived and made the movie he really wanted to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if I recall, he was filming Game of Death before this, right? And they put it on hold. Is that right?
That I am not positive on that. We can find out.
Yeah. Maybe I imagine that.
You might be right. I'm not sure. But
yeah, while you look that up, I'll just answer the question you asked. So we've been recording for about an hour and 50 minutes, and the movie itself is like an hour and 30, an hour and 45, depending on what version you watch. So yeah, we covered it, dude. We got it.
Yeah. So Game of Death was filmed between August and October of 72. So yeah, they must have.
During filming, Lee received an offer. For Enter the Dragon.
Yeah, so they filmed part of Game of Death before this. So you remembered correctly. And Game of Death, the final movie, didn't come out until 78.
I mean, just based on this film alone, like all of his films are entertaining. I mean, we didn't really talk about them. But, no. I mean, Return of the Dragon, you have the famous scene with Chuck Norris. Mm-hmm. But just with Enter the Dragon, I mean, we see Bruce Lee's ability, right? Like, we can see what he can do on screen. We can see the results of his co-writing, I guess, right? And it's unfortunate that, you know, he passed because... Who knows what kind of films we would have had and, you know, what would have become of his, you know, his lifetime, et cetera. I mean, and you know, now what we have after his death, all of these these characters, these different actors come out in Hong Kong films, Bruce Lee and Bruce, you know, Lei and all these guys, these imitators, you know, Game of Death 2 and Bruce Lee fights back from the grave and all this stuff.
Right. So that and that's important, though, because so we have this whole thing. It's called Bruceploitation. It's a whole subgenre. And there's dozens of these Bruceploitation movies. Like you mentioned, you know, there's Big Boss 2, Bruce and Shaolin Kung Fu. There's, you know, Exit the Dragon, Enter the Tiger. There's Enter the Game of Death. You know, Bruce Lee fights back from the grave.
And Enter the Game of Death.
You mentioned some of these actors, and there's a whole bunch of them that did it. But if you're going to watch one Bruceploitation movie, folks, I'm going to plug one here. And these actors, it's great because, you know, they just did a little spin. And a lot of these guys were okay actors, decent martial artists. But, you know, we had, you know, Bruce Lai, L-I, Bruce Lai, L-A-I, Bruce Lee, L-E, you know, Bruce L-E-I. You had Lee Bruce. You had Myron Bruce Lee. You had Dragon Lee. You know, all these plays on the name, Brute Lee, Bruce Tai. But there's one movie, if you're going to watch any of these movies, it's the 1980 movie, The Clones of Bruce Lee. And the reason to watch The Clones of Bruce Lee, also known as Death Penalty on Three Robots, is because it has so many of these Bruceploitation actors are in the movie. They get a bunch of these imitators. They all are in the movie together, which is great.
That's fantastic.
And Bolo Young is also in this movie.
Oh wow!
Okay, nice, man.
Yeah,
I want to see this. I have not seen this.
Yeah,
no, me neither.
Yeah, if you only see one Bruceploitation movie, watch The Clones of Bruce Lee. It's a 1980 movie. That is the one to watch. Yeah,
it's on TV.
Yeah, it's all wonderful.
Right. Yeah, I'll be watching it.
Yeah, highly recommend. I mean, it's not wonderful as in like Enter the Dragon's wonderful. It's wonderful as in crazy, campy B movie. So yeah, bad, wonderful, right?
Understood. Yeah. Going in, Jason.
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just that, you know, since he died, he was what, 32 when he passed 32. Away.
Yeah.
You know, he's almost he achieved immortality with that, right? Because we always remember him in his prime.
Yeah.
And you know, no one has ever surpassed his, you know, his presence, basically.
No. And the things that didn't get, you know, we have some other things like Circle of Iron. We haven't really talked about, which was a movie he wanted to make. It was, what was it? The Silent Flute, I think, or the
Silent Flute. Yeah.
Yeah. But it ended up being, again, Carradine made it. You know, there are so many things that he wanted to do that Carradine ended up doing, but you have to wonder how that would have turned out if actually Bruce Lee had been able to make it. Cause Circle of Iron is a interesting movie.
I don't think I've seen that either.
Oh, you have? Oh, check it out. Yeah. No, it's worth watching. It's a really interesting movie. It is. I do recommend Circle of Iron. It's they took what he wanted to make and changed it up some. So it's not the exact same movie, you know, by any means, but it's supposed to be kind of built around some of his philosophies and things. And it's a really interesting movie. I do recommend it.
Christopher Lee's in it. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
yeah. Christopher Lee's in it. Eli Walsh is in it. But James Cockburn helped finish the story out to get it made. It's really interesting. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. I'll have to look at that one too. And I mean, we see a lot of films inspired. I mean, we've talked about how foundational Enter the Dragon is, but, what is it? Fist of Legend, Jet Li film, is basically a remake of the Chinese Connection Fist of Fury. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a pretty great film, to be honest. So many of these, what he made, four films?
Yeah.
Five, I guess. And all of them have inspired other movies. And, you know, you just... Yeah, right down to today, video games like Mortal Kombat or whatever. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
I know. Look at Enter the Dragon. Enter the Dragon had the influence of it you know, when you look at the cultural impact from, like you said, from MMA, I'm not saying it created MMA, but there's definitely, it definitely, you know, you can see the early influences from Dragon Ball to Double Dragon to Street Fighter, you know, Mortal Kombat. And even, you know, regardless of what, you know, our rumors of the real Kumite and things like that out there, you know, Bloodsport, all that stuff's influenced by this movie. No offense to Frank Dukes or any of that. I mean, maybe he did all that stuff, but it's, this movie is super influential across the board.
Yep. 100%.
And interestingly enough, all the things that, you know, kind of dipped into it, I don't know that any are quite as good as it. I don't know that they do the formula quite as well, you know?
Right. Because Enter the Dragon, you know, we touched on it a little bit, but it really is a mix of genres, right? We think of it as a martial arts film, and it definitely is, but it's also kind of a spy film.
Yeah.
It's also kind of a crime film, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's one of those just magical things that just everything turned out right, you know? And it's a shame that it, you know, like I say, the success happened a month after he died.
It hit
the theater.
Yeah.
You know, this will be coming out. I'm not sure exactly what day I'm going to publish this. I might put this out on the 30th of July. I might. I don't know. I'll probably put this. But on August, so in August for the 50th anniversary, they are re-releasing this in theaters. So I know where I'm at. It's going to be in theaters August 13th and August 16th. Now, you'll have to check your local schedules wherever you live in America or across the world. But I know in the area of Virginia that I live in, on August 13th and 16th, this will be in the theaters. And I've got my tickets to go, you know, watch it on the big screen.
And his Bruce and Brandon Lee's, they're buried here in Seattle. Mm-hmm. At Lakeview Cemetery, and I've been out to the grave sites a couple times, and it's beautiful, it's lovely, and it's just when I moved here, just that was one of the reasons I got so excited to move here, because I knew there was a Bruce Lee Seattle connection, and it got me even more excited about living here.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to check out the Legend of Bruce Lee, that's on Amazon, the Chinese series, and I'm interested to check that out. And I look forward to, you know, now we're hitting this 50th anniversary, hopefully we'll get more things out there, and maybe we'll get to, and we'll end on this, but like we mentioned at the very beginning, there's a haze between, you know, what's the truth and what's the legend, right? The idea of the dragon, and maybe is there a curse on the family and this and that, and the questions about the fights where he was told you can't teach martial arts to Westerners, you know, when he got over here in the States, and that fight he had, and because you have different accounts about what that fight looked like.
Right. I believe I've heard Linda say that something like that did happen. Obviously, maybe Dragon, you know, extrapolated on it a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know that it seems like he was actually threatened.
Yeah, I think the fight, he was threatened, and I think the fight did happen. But there's different accounts on whether it Bruce Lee one-handedly, or it went like 20, 25 minutes and then they kind of stopped because Bruce Lee was out of breath or something, or, you know, there are different accounts on how the fight, and I don't know if we'll ever really know the truth on these things.
Yeah.
But none of that diminishes how amazing he was and the influence he had. And Bruce Lee changed Hollywood and the Western world's perception of this stuff forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was instrumental in, you know, sharing Chinese culture to like the broader world, right? Particularly America. Yeah.
Definitely.
Very, very important.
Yeah. So I want to thank you guys for joining me to discuss this tonight. Thank you very much.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Any final thoughts? Fun. Anything we skipped over that you want to insert here?
Not really. The only thing that I'll throw out is that you mentioned the Bruce Lee biography. show. Also, I think it's on Prime. There's a show called Warrior.
Yeah.
And it is supposedly based on Bruce's original concept for the Kung Fu show. I've watched a few episodes of that, and it's pretty decent.
I have not watched that, but I'll check that out.
Yeah, I was gonna mention that too. I'm glad you brought that up, Joe. Yeah, man, you know, like his death, it immortalized him, but it robbed us of however many more amazing movies, but more importantly, it robbed his family of an amazing man, an amazing father. Like it was a goddamn shame what happened. It sucks.
Yep.
R.I.P. Bruce Lee, man.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, without a doubt. So again, thank you for joining me, folks, or thank you for joining me, Joe and Joey, and thank you, listeners, if you made it this far. Thank you for listening to us ramble on about, you know, a subject we're passionate about and we love. You know, rewatch Enter the Dragon. If you can see it in the theater, do that. If you can't, then, you know, you can find it on streaming and all kinds of places. So find a copy and watch it. It's great.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Although if you listen to this all the, you know, for the entire time, spoilers.
Yeah. I'll have a spoiler warning in the show notes, but to be honest though, truthfully, I don't know that you really can spoil this movie that much.
Yeah, the scenes themselves are so good that, you know, knowing about them, it just makes them better to see.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the scene, like, you don't expect you know, his sister to commit suicide initially, although once she picks up that glass, you know what's going to happen. And you might not know exactly how that fight with Han's going to go initially with Williams, with the Iron Hand and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But other than those kind of two things, there really aren't, you know, everything else is pretty straightforward.
Yeah. I mean, if you've seen all the martial arts movies made since it, you've probably seen the movie, you know, you get it already.
Yeah. And there's no, and it's hard to believe that somebody's been at all involved in pop culture at all and seen anything on Bruce Lee and not seen clips of all the instrumental parts of this movie anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even if you listen to us and you've never seen it, go watch it, because it's well worth it. It the movie really does stand up. It's a 50-year-old movie that definitely still stands up today.
Absolutely. Hard agree. Go watch the movie.
Yep, go watch it.
Okay, folks. Take care and be excellent to each other.
Joke about your spouse, but the operator's screaming it's coming from inside the house. What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? Well, the audience is pretty sure he took a pretty head, and the only question left is if I could shoot him dead. Bring on the gore, bring on the gore. Is a dice playing in Moyle's by a tipper, and I'm assuming that your partner back there in the wood chipper. Don't look away. Don't look away. Don't look away. Well, the zombies are arising and the world has gone to heck. We're living for the dying and we're dying for the train wreck.
I have Joe Salvador of Raven Guy Games, and I have Joe. Okay, let me start again. I was about to say Joe Rodriguez.
Are you gonna call Joe Rodriguez, dude? Nice.
Yeah.
That was great.
You talk to Carl too much, man.
Yeah. I want to be called Iron Leopard.
Okay. Yep.
Shit, dude. I will call you fucking Iron Leopard. That's an awesome name.